News from 100 years ago, 1920.
Madame Rowley's toilet mask, or face glove, trademark registered. The toilet mask or face glove, in position to the face, to be worn 3 times in the week, is used by ladies of refinement everywhere for beautifying and preserving the skin and removing complexional imperfections. It has been wonderfully successful for 21 years at home and abroad, made of pure and approved materials. It is recommended by well-known medical and scientific authorities. The toilet mask is the only time-tested and safe, natural beautifier. It is soft and pliable, and can be easily, comfortably, and privately worn. Complexion blemishes may be hidden imperfectly by cosmetics and powders, but can only be removed permanently by the toilet mask. By its use, every kind of spots, impurities, roughness, wrinkles, etc. vanish from the skin, leaving it soft, clear, brilliant, and beautiful. It is a toilet treasure. Costs little and saves its user money. Famous society ladies, actresses, belles, etc. use it. Valuable illustrated pamphlet with proofs of full particulars. Mailed free by the Toilet Mask Company, 1164 Broadway, New York.
And from the Philadelphia Inquirer in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Romance and cash of German girl and weird tangle. Claim to fortune depends largely on her status since wedding. She sues in Berlin for free use of $1,800,000. At death of aunt. The Inquirer correspondent has learned some of the details of the suit brought by Mrs. Erna Hiracher of San Francisco, a prospective heiress of $1,800,000 in American money to give her immediate free use of that fortune upon the death of her aunt, a Mrs. Miss Grunbaum, an American widow who is old and infirm. The sum in American value is the largest amount that has ever figured in a private suit in a German court. Sphinx-like secrecy is maintained by the attorneys on both sides, but it is admitted that the case has been brought before the first director of the Court of Berlin. The fortune was made by a San Francisco merchant named Grunbaum. It consists mainly of property in San Francisco and Honolulu, and it is held by the Mercantile Trust Company of San Francisco. Acting as a trustee for a German-born childless widow, she is American through her marriage to Grunbaum. Mrs. Grunbaum lived with German relatives in Berlin prior to the entry of the United States into the war. She is also said to have sojourned considerably in sanitariums and asylums. After the war, she was placed in a sanitarium in Kreuzlingen, near the German border, where she still remains. The big estate was to go to Erna Goldschmidt, her German-born niece, now 30 years old, in the event of Mrs. Grunbaum's death. The correspondent understands that the provisions of Miss Grunbaum's will in respect to the legacy are irrevocable. Last December, Miss Goldschmidt surprised her Berlin relatives by announcing visitors from America were soon coming to see her. Soon afterwards, she introduced them to Edmund Hiracher, law partner of Samuel Rosenheim, the firm having offices in the Chronicle Building, San Francisco. Hiracher, who is young and handsome, was accompanied by his father. They stopped first at the Esplanade and then at the Hotel Bristol. According to accounts, the young man paid high-pressure court to the prospective heiress, lavishing expensive presents upon her. Among them, a fur coat that cost 70,000 marks. Hiracher's ardor seems to have won Erna's heart in record time, for within a few days of his arrival, she announced to Berlin relatives her intention to marry him. They seem to have cut the German red tape formalities, and to have obtained a marriage license within 3 days. Relatives are said to have done their utmost to persuade the young woman that haste would surely bring repentance. Just before the time set for the wedding, her relatives persuaded her to go to Samuel Gronemann, a Berlin lawyer, and get his advice as to means for the protection of her prospective fortune. Gronemann advised her to give an irrevocable power of attorney to a trustee for a period of 2 years, and she gave such a document to Richard Lowenthal, director of a publishing house. On the next day, Erna Goldschmidt became an American citizen. Soon afterward, they sailed for the United States. Mrs. Erna Hiracher has now brought suit against Richard Lowenthal, trustee, through attorney Justice Rett Leopold Kolstak, to force a revocation and annulment of the 2-year irrevocable power of attorney given to him as the guardian of her prospective fortune. In the legal hair splitting that the case is likely to develop, the question may be raised as to the status of the petitioner. If she had become an American during the war, she would certainly have been classed as an enemy alien. And the question seems to have some present pertinency from the fact that the formal peace has not been concluded between Germany and the United States. A leading Berlin lawyer informs the correspondent, however, that in marrying an American, the woman not only freed herself of possible war claim, but that she will also escape the confiscatory German inheritance and other taxes whenever the state shall fall to her.
The beauty of a woman. Most actresses today had to say this when asked about their beauty tips. For attractive lips, speak with words of kindness. For lovely eyes, seek out good in people. For a slim figure, share your food with the hungry. For beautiful hair, let a child run his or her fingers through it once a day. For poise, walk with the knowledge you'll never walk alone. People, even more than things, have to be restored, renewed, revived, reclaimed, and redeemed. Never throw out anybody.
And now, Advice to Girls by Annie Laurie.
Dear Annie Laurie, I'm a girl in my teens. I'm in love with a boy 2 years my senior, and my mother objects to my liking him. She does not even let me speak to him, but I love him very dearly. May I love him, or must I take my mother's advice? So far as I know, he is a nice boy. Please advise me what to do. Signed, Sour Pickle. Dear Sour Pickle, you've not told me your age, but in any case, you should do as your mother wishes. Take your mother's advice above all things. A girl in her teens can hardly hope for better. If she is willing, he should call upon you. She may learn to think better of him. Dear Annie Laurie, I'm very fond of company. I'm rather pretty, and my friends tell me that I'm very graceful, but I'm so shy that I don't know what to do with myself whenever I get out among people. I can think of plenty of things to say when I'm at home, but the minute I'm in company, I'm so afraid I will make a mistake and give people a chance to laugh at me that I can't speak a word. What shall I do about it? My mother says it's a sign of sweet character for a girl to be shy, but my brother says it's a sign of a chump. Which do you think is right? Signed, Sweet and 20. Dear Sweet and 20, well, little Sweet and 20, I'm afraid I'm inclined to agree with brother. I've known some very nice, clever, kindly, big-minded people who were shy, but they weren't in the habit of thinking much about it. As a rule, however, the average case of shyness is just a case of overweening self-consciousness. If you'll stop thinking about yourself a few minutes and think about what the other people are saying, you'll find a great relief. You aren't half as important as you are afraid to think. Nobody is watching you like a lynx. Nobody is sitting with bated breath trying to get a chance to laugh at you. And as to the laughing, can't you laugh at yourself? It's a great accomplishment, the laughing habit. Try to cultivate it. It will take up your attention. If people do laugh at you anyway, is there anything so terrific in that? What's the matter with you, little girl, is that you just discovered yourself. And you're so interested in the discovery that you can't get your mind on anything else. No doubt you are pretty and bright and sweet as a peach, as somehow I read between the lines of your letter that make you feel like you are. But dear me, you're just one in thousands. The whole world isn't standing around waiting to see you go by. Honestly, it isn't, little sister. So take courage, be kind, be good-natured, and be friendly. Be sorry for the other people a little while. And the first thing you know, you will forget all about being shy. Dear Annie Laurie, I'm a girl 18 years old and have had two young men ask me to marry them. The first is 28 years old and seems to think a lot of me, but he tries to get me to kiss him and I won't do it, and then he pouts. The other boy is 21 years old and seems to think more of me than the other one does. My cousin thinks a lot of me too and gets jealous. Will you please tell me which to drop? Signed, Thelma. Dear Thelma, you surely should drop the one who tries to kiss you, as he shows the lack of respect for you. Your cousin has no right to be jealous. So that leaves you with the one I believe you want me to speak up for. Dear Annie Laurie, I've been a widow for 2 years. Also, I'm 27 years old. I've been going with a very nice young man of 29. I love him very dearly. He has asked me to marry him. I went with him before I was married. I'm living with my father, and he will not let the young man come to the house. The only way I get to see him is to take him to ride. My father liked him until I started to go with him, and he likes him now, but he doesn't want me to know it. I have a little boy, 3 years of age, and my father says if I get married, I can't have my child. Dear Annie Laurie, please advise me as what I must do. Should I marry him or not? Signed, Broken Hearted. Dear Broken Hearted, find out if you can what your father's objection is to a new marriage for you. If it is a sensible objection, give attention to it. Otherwise, as a woman who has been married and has a child, you may be expected to have some judgment of your own. In no event can he keep your child from you. Annie Laurie will welcome letters of inquiry on subjects of feminine interest from young women readers of this paper and will reply to them in these columns. Letters to Miss Laurie should be addressed to her, care of this office. Emergency service, after business hours, phone Franklin 6616 for your heroin. This drug is still available at Allen's Drug Stores for your prescriptions. Heroin. Free motorcycle delivery. Special long trips. And now for wire flashes. From the Bixby Bulletin in Bixby, Oklahoma. The Russian Soviet government has sent a delegate with peace proposals to the headquarters of General Wrangel, commander of the anti-Bolshevik army in southern Russia, according to a Warsaw newspaper received by wireless from Berlin. General Budny, the famous cavalry leader, has definitely severed his connection with the Soviet government and is recruiting anti-Bolshevik troops for the purpose of marching on Kiev, according to advices reaching the French War Office. A dispatch from Raval says, "There is no doubt that the Soviet army is facing dissolution. The new peace terms were forced through as a desperate means to prevent this dissolution. The news that the army delegation of 12 men sent to Moscow were shot caused great indignation and assisted considerably in the Polish victory at the Niemen River. Any Russian submarines encountered on the high seas will be attacked on sight by British naval forces," according to a note sent by Earl Curzon, British Foreign Secretary, to M. Chicherlin, the Russian Bolshevist Foreign Minister. At the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the correspondent of the Associated Press was informed that the new German proposition with regard to reparations brought to Paris from Berlin by Charles Laurent, the French ambassador to Germany, for settlement is very much the same as that presented at the SPA conference, and that it probably will be rejected. Great Britain has threatened to take certain action against Soviet Russia if steps are not taken by October 10th for the release of British prisoners held by the Bolsheviki, says the London Herald, which prints what purports to be the text of notes exchanged by the British and Soviet governments. News that an armistice has been signed at Riga by the Polish and Russian Soviet peace delegates was received enthusiastically by the population of Warsaw on the eve of the armistice. Fighting virtually ceased along the entire front. The International Labor Organization of League of Nations will meet in General Conference for the third time, April 4, 1921, at Geneva, Switzerland. Failure of Fernando Iglesias Calderon to compose the differences between the United States and Mexico was followed by the publication of diplomatic correspondence between the two countries on the oil controversy. Members of the Calderon mission admitted that the oil question was a stumbling block. America's tax bill for the fiscal year ended June 30th amounted to $5,408,075,468. Approximately $1.5 billion more than was paid into the federal treasury in the previous 12 months. Final figures for the year was contained in the preliminary report of the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Three Yukon riverboats, the last of the season from Fairbanks, Alaska, to Dawson, Western Territory, and carrying capacity lists of passengers and mail, are reported frozen below Eagle, Alaska, according to Juno advices. Seizure and sale of foreign ships violating American prohibition laws is under consideration by the Bureau of Internal Revenue as a means of curbing liquor smuggling, Officials of the Bureau were represented as seeing no solution to the problem other than through invoking libel provisions of the Volstead Act against ships bringing in liquor. The 1920 population of continental United States has been announced by the Census Bureau as 105,683,108. This is an increase of 13,710,842, or 14.9% since 1910. This total does not include the population of outlying possessions, which will be announced as soon as the figures for Alaska and the military and naval service abroad are tabulated. The 1920 corn crop promises to be the largest in the history of the country by more than 90 million bushels, a yield of 3,216,192,000 bushels compared with the previous record production of 3,124,742,000 bushels in 1912 was forecast. Prediction that the recoverable oil reserves of the country, now estimated by the Geological Survey at 7 billion barrels, would be in effect more than double by proved processes of recovery, was made in a statement by J.O. Lewis, Chief Petroleum Technologist of the Bureau of Mines. In an effort to check illegal liquor sales, National Prohibition Commissioner Kramer has ordered withdrawal of whiskey from bond temporarily suspended in New York City and parts of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Proposals for general division of working and wage agreements, necessitated by business depression and falling prices, have been submitted by the Clothing Manufacturers Association of New York to the representatives of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers Union. Joseph F. Herron, assistant purchasing agent for Philadelphia, learned recently at the Misericordia Hospital that his back is broken. He believed all summer he had lumbago and does not know when he broke his back. Gold valued at approximately $9,500,000, consigned to the Federal Reserve Bank, has arrived in New York on the Aquitana. This is the fourth recent shipment of gold from the Bank of England, making a total of $38 million. Details in an attempt to poison Anita Baldwin of Los Angeles, daughter of the late E.J. Lucky Baldwin, and one of the claimants of his millions, became public recently in a letter from Miss Baldwin to Senator James D. Felon of California. Colonel Arthur B. Woods, chairman of the American Legion Americanization Committee, has been notified that a number of radicals recently deported on the so-called Soviet Ark, the Buford, are on their way back to this country. Five men were killed, five others missing, and believed to be dead, and more than a score injured the other day in an explosion that wrecked a forward compartment of the British tanker G.R. Crow of Toronto, undergoing repairs at a Brooklyn shipyard. Appointment of George E. Keller of Boston as Special Assistant to the Attorney General has been announced at the Department of Justice. Dr. John W. Duke, 52 years old, one of the leading alienists of the Southwest, died in his home in Guthrie, Oklahoma, recently. Dr. Duke always had been prominent in the medical circles and civil affairs. He was president of the State Board of Health for 4 years and was a candidate for governor 6 years ago. Loss estimated at $1 million was the toll taken by fire at Cameron, Texas, recently, which destroyed 7,000 bales of cotton, and the compress and warehouses of the Cameron Cotton Press Company. The opinion among officers and the watchmen employed at the compress is that the fire was of incendiary origin. Fire, which started in the rear of a hardware store in Hanna, Oklahoma, swept part of the business section of the town and caused damage estimated at $100,000, according to a report received at Okmulgee. The first arrest in La Jara, Colorado, in 3 years was made recently. A man, after being here only a short time, was accused of stealing an overcoat from a garage. When the marshal was ready to bring the prisoner up for trial, it was found that there was no police magistrate. The prisoner was released. Armed guards were placed at the St. Louis City Hall and Municipal Courts building after the police came in possession of a note containing a warning that the City Hall would be blown up. Authorities are inclined to view the matter as a hoax, but said no chances would be taken. 6 million acres, equivalent approximately to one-third of the territory of the British Isles, are subject to the new land law, the object of which is to distribute land to the peasants in South Russia. The southern Tyrol, allotted to Italy by the Australian Peace Treaty, has formally passed into Italian hands. There were solemn ceremonies in the churches and public places. The city of Innsbruck was draped in mourning. The Polish authorities assert it was ascertained after the Reds were driven eastward that more than 1,000 Poles, old men, women, and children, had been killed by the Bolsheviki in the Vilna region during the occupation. Polish and Russian Soviet delegates engaged in negotiations, looking to an armistice and a peace treaty adjourned without signing an armistice. No date was set for the next meeting of the conference. A severe earthquake shock at Baguio, capital of the Benguet province in Luzon, about 150 miles north of Manila, damaged the observatory there, broke water mains on the military reservation, and cracked a number of concrete walls. The province of Ontario has returned to wartime fuel conditions. The government is said to have taken this drastic step at the recommendation of the Dominion Board of Railway Commissioners as a result of a shortage of coal. The wife of Admiral Reinhard von Scheer, chief of the German Admiralty staff, and her maid were assassinated, and his 18-year-old daughter seriously wounded by two masked men who broke into the Admiral's villa at Weimar, Germany.
And that was news from 100 years ago. You can hear more of our podcasts on all listening outlets. Thank you for listening.
And for our newspaper soap opera, Revelations of a Wife by Adele Garrison.
Episode 2, The First Quarrel. I'll give you three guesses, Madge. Dickie stood just inside the door of the living room, holding an immense parcel, carefully wrapped. His hat was on in the back of his head, his eyes shining, his whole face aglow with boyish mischief. It's for you. My first housekeeping present that is needed in every well-regulated family, he burlesqued boastfully. But you are not to see it until we have something to eat, and you have guessed what it is. I know it's something lovely, dear, I replied sedately, but come to your dinner, it's getting cold. Dickie looked a trifle hurt as he followed me into the dining room. I knew what he expected, enthusiastic curiosity and a demand for the immediate opening of the parcel. I can imagine the pretty enthusiasm, the caresses with which almost any other woman would have greeted a bridegroom of 2 weeks with his first present, but it is simply impossible for me to gush. I can't express emotion of any kind with the facility of most women. I worshipped my mother, but I rarely kissed her or expressed my love for her in words. My love for Dickie terrifies me sometimes. It is so strong. I can't go up to him and offer him an unsolicited kiss or caress. Respond to his caresses, yes. But offer them of my own volition? Never. There's something inside me that makes it an absolute impossibility. What's the menu, Maggie? The beef again? Dick's tone was mildly quizzical, his smile mischievous. But I flushed hotly. He had touched a sore spot. The butcher had brought me a huge slab of meat for my first dinner when I had timidly ordered rib roast. And with the aid of my mother's cookbook and my own smattering of cooking, my sole housewifely accomplishments, I had been trying to disguise it for subsequent meals. This is positively its last appearance on any stage, I assured him, trying to be gay. Besides, it's a casserole with rice. And I defy you to detect whether the chief ingredient be fish, flesh, or fowl. Casserole is usually my pet aversion, Dick said solemnly. Look not on the casserole when it's table d'hôte, is one of the pet little proverbs in my immediate set. Too much I like Spanish steak, and the other good chances for tomains, but if you made it, I'll tackle it, if you have to call the ambulance in a half an hour. Dick, you surely do not think I would use meat that was doubtful, do you? I asked, horror-stricken. Don't eat it. Wait and I'll fix up some eggs for you. Dick rose stiffly, walked slowly around to my side of the table, and gravely tapped my head in an imitation of a phrenologist.
absolute depression where the bump called sense of humor ought to be. Too bad. Pretty creature, too. Cause her lots of trouble in the days to come, he chanted solemnly. Then he bent and kissed me. Don't be a goose, Madge, he admonished. And never, never take me seriously. I don't know the meaning of the word. Come on, let's eat the thingamabob. I'll bet it's delicious. He uncovered the casserole and regarded the steaming contents critically. Smells scrumptious, he announced. What's in the other? Potatoes au gratin? As he took off the cover of the other serving dish. Good, one of my favorites. He piled a liberal portion on my plate and helped himself as generously. He ate heartily of both dishes, ignoring or not noticing that I scarcely touched either dish, for I was fast lapsing into one of the moods which my little mother used to call my morbid streaks, and which she had vainly tried to cure ever since I was a tiny girl. Dick didn't like my cooking. He was only pretending. Dick was disappointed in the way I received the announcement of his present. Probably he soon would find me wanting in other things. As I took our plates to the kitchen and brought on a lettuce and tomato salad with mayonnaise dressing, over which I had toiled over an hour, I was trying hard to choke back the tears when I brought the baked apples which I had prepared with especial care for dessert. Dickie gave them one glance, which to my oversensitive mind looked disparagingly. Then he pushed back his chair. I don't believe I want any dessert today. The rest of the dinner was so good I ate too much of it. Eat yours, and I'll undo your surprise. Whatever in the world? I began, as Dick lifted the lid and revealed a big Angora cat. Then my voice changed. Why, Dick, you don't mean... But Dickie was absorbed in lifting the cat out. Isn't she a beauty? He said admiringly. But I had backed almost into the dining room. I suppose she is, I replied faintly. But surely you don't intend her for me. Why not? Dick's tone was sharp, sharper than I'd ever heard it. He set the cat down on the floor and she walked over to me. I pushed her away gently with my foot as I replied, because I dislike cats intensely. Because you know cats are so insanitary. Always carrying diseases. Oh, get out of it, Madge, Dick interrupted. Forget that scientific foolishness you absorbed when you were schoolmamming. Besides, this cat is a thoroughbred. Never been outside the home where she was born until now. Do you happen to know that this gift you were tossing aside so nonchalantly would have cost if it hadn't been given to me by a dear friend? A cool 200, that's all. It seems to me you might try to get over your prejudices, especially when I tell you that I am very fond of cats. And I like to see them around. Dickie's voice held a note of appeal, but I chose to ignore it. My particular little devil must have sat at my elbow. I am sorry, I said coldly, but really, I don't see why it's any more incumbent on me to try to overcome my very real aversion to cats than it is on you to try to do without their society. Very well. If you feel that way about it, then there's nothing more to be said. Dickie slammed the living room door behind him to emphasize his words and ran down the steps. His soft hat was pulled down to his eyebrows, and anyone who ran into him might read that he is in a rage. Back in the living room, huddled up in the big chair, which is the chief pride of the woman who rents us the furnished apartment, I sat as angry as Dick, and heartsick besides. Our first quarrel had come, but the cat remained. What was I to do with her? And that was episode 2 of Revelations of a Wife. Tune in to episode 3. Thank you for listening.